I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Yesterday, special counsel Robert Mueller indicted Paul Manafort, former Trump campaign manager, and his business partner, Rick Gates, who was also a senior official with the Trump campaign, on 12 counts, including money laundering, not registering as foreign agents. Shortly after President Trump tweeted, "There is no collusion," Mueller's office announced that George Papadopoulos, who was a foreign policy advisor for the Trump campaign, had pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI investigating possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. He apparently has been cooperating with the agency. Byron Tao has been following the story for the Wall Street Journal, and he joins us on Radio Times to update us on where things stand. Byron, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be with you.
So what did Mueller charge both Manafort and Gates with?
So this is a pretty serious indictment. This is a 31-page, 12-count indictment, including a number of technical banking and lobbying violations, two counts of conspiracy involving money laundering and tax charges, and a number of other very serious allegations contained in this indictment that was unsealed yesterday.
There was a lot of speculation leading up to yesterday's announcement, but the fact that the FBI had raided Manafort's apartment over the summer, did that indicate that the FBI had its eyes on him?
Definitely. And we've gotten indications that surveillance or suspicion about Manafort's business activities actually goes back long before the 2016 campaign, dating back to perhaps even 2012. Essentially, Manafort is a high-flying Washington lobbyist slash consultant who, in the last two, three decades, has cultivated a pretty wide international client roster, including at one point the government of Ukraine. The Ukraine at the time was ruled by a pro-Russia regime who was trying to cultivate ties in the West. And a lot of the investigations of Manafort stems from that work that started back in 2006.
Your article in today's paper, and I'm not sure we can do justice to it on the radio because it is rather complicated, but how Manafort was able to have this quote-unquote lavish lifestyle, but how he was able to move money around. This involves properties in New York and other places. It also involves some banks in Cyprus. Can you walk us through that, Byron?
Sure. So the essential scheme was that Manafort and his business partner, Rick Gates, controlled dozens of offshore entities, some of them based in Cyprus, some of them based in the UK, some of them based in the Caribbean. And he used money held by those entities or in foreign bank accounts to pay for a lot of things here in the United States. So he initiated wire transfers coming out of those companies, not coming out of his own personal bank account, to pay for example, $850,000 on men's clothing, $650,000 in landscaping. He bought four Range Rovers and a Mercedes-Benz. He spent nearly $1 million at an antique rug store in Alexandria, Virginia. Other wire transfers were used to pay for property. That includes a condo in Soho, the trendy Manhattan neighborhood, another $3 million brownstone house in Brooklyn. All of that was paid for out of these entities, and prosecutors allege that was used to finance a very lavish lifestyle with money he never paid U.S. taxes on.
And obviously, there's nothing wrong with a lavish lifestyle. The problem, at least for the government or for Mueller, is that he did not pay taxes on this.
Well, that's several of the counts involve conspiracy to commit money laundering and some banking violations. So if you control offshore accounts or you have foreign corporations, you're supposed to report that to the Treasury Department for this very reason, that they are concerned about Americans who do work abroad or do work with foreign entities trying to launder money back in through the United States. Several other counts involve the work itself. If you're a foreign lobbyist, if you work for a foreign government, you're expected to register with the Department of Justice. There are some very strict protocols you have to follow. You have to file semi-annual reports on this, and the government alleges that Manafort and Gates did not do that.
And were all these cars and apartments, was that all for Paul Manafort himself or for other people?
It's not clear. In some parts of the indictment, it does refer to his children and his I believe he has some daughters and his son-in-law. In other cases, the property was definitely used as either a rental property. I believe the indictment makes reference to renting it out on Airbnb, and some of the properties were mortgaged, meaning that he bought them with cash from foreign entities and then took out a mortgage on them so that he could have liquid assets that he could live off of without paying taxes on it. So it's not clear exactly who all this spending was for, but it appears to be a scheme that involves $75 million and up to $18 million transferred from foreign entities. And so this is a pretty serious indictment from the special counsel's office.
Now, was he working for the Trump campaign when he was also working as a foreign agent for Ukraine?
So, no, there was no overlap in the time he was working for the government of Ukraine and when he came on to the Trump campaign. So he stops working for the government of Ukraine in late 2014 when that regime was driven out of power, and he starts working for the Trump campaign in early to mid 2016. But prosecutors do say that a lot of the transfers did happen, or there was some overlap in the timeline, and that this continued well into 2016. So the foreign agent, the unregistered lobbying accusations happened prior to joining the Trump campaign, but the prosecutors say that a lot of these transfers seem to have continued right up through last year.
And who's this guy, Rick Gates?
Rick Gates is another longtime Republican consultant. He's been a business partner of Paul Manafort's for a while. He worked on the same account, essentially working for this government of Ukraine. And he also joined the Trump campaign around the same time. And he actually left. He actually stayed in Trump's orbit well into this year. So Manafort was forced out as campaign manager in August of 2016, in part over some investigative reporting that showed he was linked to the government of Ukraine and that he may have done some unregistered lobbying. The Trump campaign forces him out, but Rick Gates actually sticks around, becomes deputy campaign manager, and works on the presidential transition. After the transition, he goes and works for a pro-Trump outside group. So he's been in the president's orbit for a fairly long time.
That's Byron Tao, and he's a reporter for The Wall Street Journal, talking about yesterday's announcement, the indictment of Paul Manafort and Rick Gates. Now, they have pleaded not guilty. They're under house arrest, and their passports were taken away. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments for our guest, Byron Tao? Now, this George Papadopoulos, was that a surprise? And that seems to be the big catch, if I can use that word, that was part of the news of yesterday.
Yeah, so that caught, I think, almost everyone by surprise, including, I think, the White House. They were prepared to argue that anything that happened involving Paul Manafort and Rick Gates happened long before the campaign, that all this unregistered lobbying and money laundering was predated his involvement with Trump World, and that he had very little to do with the White House and with Mr. Trump's governing agenda. But this fellow, George Papadopoulos, actually was indicted for lying to the FBI and actually pled guilty, I should say. And the conduct, the underlying conduct that the FBI was asking about actually happened during the campaign. So there was, they were asking him about some contacts he had with a professor who he knew to be close to the Russian government. And prosecutors say he lied about that and destroyed evidence concerning his contacts with foreign nationals. He erased his Facebook account. He got rid of his cell phone. And they say he materially misled them and offered a false statement.
Well, it sounded like he was trying to set up a meeting between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. Am I overstating that?
I mean, that is essentially what the That is the picture that the indictment paints. Now, some of the names are redacted. Some of the folks involved in this are unknown. But it does seem like the Russian government, or perhaps a cutout for the Russian government, or people close to the Russian government, were trying to get an in into the campaign. And in one case, he's even said he was offered dirt on Hillary Clinton and a trove of her emails. And it does seem like he was trying to establish, or the Russian government was trying to establish, a back channel with him to the Trump campaign.
Now, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked about this yesterday at the White House. She said basically he was a volunteer, almost making it sound like he might have been someone on the level of answering phones or something that part of the campaign that was not really that important. Let me play something that goes back to 2016, and this was President Trump talking about his foreign policy team. He was talking to the Washington Post, and he was listing people that, if he were president, who might sit on his foreign policy team.
Waleed Faris, who you probably know, PhD, advisor to the House of Representatives Caucus, and he's a counterterrorism expert. Carter Page, PhD. George Papadopoulos, he's an oil and energy consultant. Excellent guy.
So there is some question, Byron, about just what his involvement was as a member of the campaign. My understanding is that he wasn't paid, nor was Paul Manafort and some others as well. This, the president or the candidate Trump talking about this person would be part of his foreign policy team. Does that in any way reveal something about his position within the campaign, him being, of course, George Papadopoulos?
Yeah, so it's not unusual for an advisor, someone advising the candidate on foreign policy, to be unpaid. Often folks who take those advisory roles are typically very senior and offer advice or counsel to the campaigns for free. In this case, President Trump was running as an outsider. He had very few foreign policy experts flocking to his campaign to advise him. He was offering a very unique and unorthodox foreign policy. And so it seems this young man, he was, I think, in his late 20s or early 30s at the time, was acting essentially as a foreign policy advisor to the campaign. He had a background as an energy consultant. He had worked for think tanks before, but he wasn't someone that was well known. It doesn't sound like, from the reporting, that he was the kind of person just getting coffee and answering the phones. But we don't know. There's a famous Instagram now of him sitting at the table with the president and some other national security types, and you know, it raises questions about how high up he was and how much access he had to the future president.
Let me get Evan from Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Evan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
To you both. I have a quick question, and it's regarding Manafort and the possibility of a presidential pardon. If a president pardons somebody, they're no longer liable under federal charges, but that does not include state charges. So my question to Byron is, in his research, how much of Manafort's alleged money laundering has flowed through New York, i.e. Trump Tower, which would make him possibly still liable in the event of a pardon?
Can you answer that, Byron?
Well, that's a good question. I'd have to go back to the indictment to see which states the money was spent in, but it's certainly a possibility that he could be brought up on state-level charges. And I think we do know that the Attorney General of New York has said he is interested in investigating some of the questions around the president and the Russia investigation. So it is entirely possible that even if he's offered a blanket pardon at the federal level, that he could still face some state-level troubles.
You mentioned the fact that Papadopoulos said that he could, he was talking to someone who had dirt on Hillary Clinton. This, of course, raises the question about the meeting that Donald Trump Jr. had with a Russian lawyer claiming to have dirt on Hillary Clinton, ended up being about the Magnitsky Act. But is there a connection, you think, between these two, what are they, dangles? I'm not even sure what they are.
Yeah, well, they both seem to relate to something that was a bit of an obsession for, I guess, both the campaign and the media at the time. There was a lot of reporting about Hillary Clinton and her emails and the deleted emails, and both the meeting in Trump Tower and this George Papadopoulos's contacts with folks that appear to be close to the Kremlin relate to getting those documents. And I think prosecutors will be probing the relation and sort of how deeply involved the Russian state or agents of the Russian state or cutouts for the Russian state were in both of these incidents.
Do we know how the White House is responding to what Mueller said and did yesterday?
Well, they're certainly trying to distance themselves from a lot of this. You know, the White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said that this has nothing to do with us. She described Manafort's conduct as predating his involvement with the Trump campaign. This morning on Twitter, the president called Papadopoulos a liar, a known liar, and distancing himself from this young this fellow. So there's certainly an attempt to insulate the president and say that these were low-level things or these were people that were these were things that predated his presidential run.
And do we know, or do you know, what Mueller is looking into now?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. The fact that Papadopoulos was arrested in late July, and this did not leak, Washington is a famously gossipy town, seems to indicate to me that Mueller's running a pretty tight ship. You know, we do know he's looking at the National Security Advisor, Mike Flynn, who was forced to resign in February, and we do know he's probing questions of obstruction of justice around James Comey's firing. But I would not be surprised if there were other completely unexpected developments that have not been speculated on or reported that come down the pike.
Byron, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Byron Tao, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for joining us.